Hi, I'm Kathy Forstein, music director at KC Cafe Radio. Over the past several years, we've had the pleasure of playing Susie Glaze and the High Lonesome Band's album, White Swan. Last year, Susie and the Boys released their newest album, Not That Kind of Girl. And in its first few months of release, it's already received critical acclaim, as well as a top spot on the charts. Susie Glaze and the High Lonesome Band make their home in Southern California, but their music travels the globe with the sounds of the Blue Ridge Mountains, Texas Honky Tonks, and the Celtic Sea. Thanks, Susie, for joining us today on KC Cafe Radio.
Hey, it's great to be with you, Kathy.
I wanted to start off talking about the cover of the album itself. I love the picture on the album cover. Can you describe it to our listeners and also tell us what the picture is?
Sure. First of all, I'll just describe it to you. It's actually a Depression-era photograph that I found online, courtesy of a friend of mine. It's a black and white photograph of a little girl with a gigantic banjo. And she's obviously plucked it off the wall of her parents' home, but it's almost the size of her whole body. And she's sitting on a bench, and to her right is a little black dog with gigantic ears who's sitting back on his haunches with his paws up, and his mouth is open as well. And she's singing, or she has her mouth open, and it looks like they're singing together while she pretends to play the banjo. It was just such an exquisite capture of, you know, kind of my personality and also the tenor of our music and what it reflects, and just the uniqueness of the photograph itself just really drew me. And how I found it, again, through a friend online, but then I tracked it down. The ownership is by the South Carolina Historical Society, who owns the copyright on this Depression-era photo. Mm-hmm. So I was able to license it from them, and it's been such a big hit. In fact, Sing Out Magazine wanted to review the album based just on their attraction to this photo. So I was really happy with that.
Yeah, the joy on the little girl's face and the joy on the dog's face are just incredible. It's just a really, really cool album cover. It's one of my favorites. And I like the title, too. If you just, someone said Not That Kind of Girl, you kind of would maybe think of something else. But then you look at that album cover and you're like, okay, I get what they're going with this, you know?
And really, what do you think that means?
Well, some people would say, you know, it could be like a girl who doesn't do things sexually or something like that. You know, or like with this picture of the album cover, it's not, you know, it's not your typical kind of girl. It's not your girl who plays with dolls and things. It's your little more of a tomboy kind of girl, you know. Yeah. That's what I get from the album cover.
You know, in fact, when we do shows and I meet the audiences after, they want to know if that picture is me. Tell them that it literally was not me, but that I felt that it was my spiritual self, yeah. You know. So in a way, it's me, but not literally me. But yeah, you know, it's a play on words, the song, Not That Kind of Girl. And since we're talking about that, the Not That Kind of Girl was written by Rob Carlson, our lead guitarist. It's really a song about fidelity and about being true, you know. So the lyrics go, if you want someone, you know, to basically leave you when times get rough, you have to look for someone else because I'm not that kind of girl.
Yeah, it's a great song, too. I wanted to go back to your background in music. What types of music did you listen to growing up?
Well, you know, I grew up in Middle Tennessee, and my parents were Midwesterners who had relocated to the Mid-South, and they were listening to big band music that they grew up with in the 30s. So I listened to that. I also listened to a lot of Broadway music, but then the folk revival came along, and my brothers, who are older than I am, had formed a folk group where they were basically singing Peter, Paul, and Mary and the Kingston Trio stuff. They turned me on to all the folk music that they were listening to, and so I discovered things along with them, you know, Judy Collins and Joni Mitchell, and of course, Peter, Paul, and Mary, and started to hear, you know, the songs that really attracted me. Then I went into theater, and because I could sing, I ended up in musical theater, and so I studied a lot of that music as well. So I think what all these disparate kinds of sounds really come together in is in storytelling and emotional, you know, expression, because that's where all that passion comes from either, all of those musics.
Did you ever perform with your family?
No, because I was so much younger. My brothers are 7 and 9 years older than I am, and so I was kind of a little squirt and didn't really have any chops back then. I sang for myself and just learned and studied. you know, and watch them. But we didn't perform together. Later, when I was like 16 or so, my brother and my youngest brother of the two and I did perform together when we would go into Nashville to the open mic nights and sing the songs of his original compositions, because our older brother had gone off to college. And so we were there in near Nashville is where we lived, in a town called Murfreesboro. Mm-hmm. And it was just about 30 miles down the road from Nashville. So we would go into the open mics and the writers' nights and those bars near Vanderbilt University and sing his original songs, which we worked on together. So that was really fun. I was completely underage, but it was still really an eye-opener. And we quieted the room on several occasions and then would pass the hat, you know, just like they did in Greenwich Village. It was very, very cool.
Yeah, that is cool. It's cool to be able to work with your brother. My brother was a huge influence on me musically starting out as a young kid, too. What point did you start writing your own songs?
Well, I don't write my own songs. The fellow in our band, Rob Carlson, provides us with original material. He's a very prolific songwriter, very gifted, who's had been writing for a long time. And when we met him in 2003, he brought us a vast trove of songs that had been in his drawer for a long time. And we were so impressed that my husband, Steve, and I, who's our mandolinist, started kind of woodshedding with Rob and making arrangements for me to sing lead on the songs and putting them in certain keys and all that. So what we ended up with doing is forming a band around Rob's original songwriting. And that's really was the reason for the formation.
How did you find Rob?
We met each other at a festival, a little small festival. It's kind of a benefit for someone up here at Lake Hughes in Santa Clarita area near Valencia. And he was on stage playing with friends of ours, playing a really wonderful guitar. He's a great player. And we went up to talk with him about, you know, maybe playing together sometime and meet him and stuff. And so we did that, and several months went by before he got in touch with us and said he wanted to collaborate and play some of his songs for us. And we said, absolutely, come on over. And that's just how it started.
Mm-hmm. Tell our audience the members of your band and what their roles are in the band, what instruments they play.
Sure. Well, that's Rob Carlson on lead guitar, Mark Indictor on fiddle. I'm playing rhythm guitar and auto harp and lap dulcimer, Appalachian dulcimer. Steve Rankin is on mandolin, bouzouki, and guitar. And Fred Sanders on stand-up bass.
And they're all just incredible musicians, just amazing musicians.
I think so, too.
So how did you find all of them? Were you all meeting each other at folk festivals and things, or did you put an ad out, or how did you...
No, actually, Steve and I are a married couple and have been good longtime friends with Fred Sanders on bass for a long time. The three of us are actors and met each other, you know, via working in theater in various parts of the United States. And also Steven and Fred were in another band here in town. They were in other bands way before I met them, but they were in a band here in town in L.A. and that they let me join in the 90s. That was a kind of the formation of my ability to be, you know, in a band and know what that kind of performing was like, as opposed to being an actor in a play or in a musical. So that band continued on for a little while we were forming the High Lonesome Band. And so when Steve and I and Rob were woodshedding, we asked Fred to come and just collaborate with us and play with us and see what was going to happen. So that was the four of us. And we had a fiddler who moved away to Austin, around 2000. I guess Charlie moved away in like 2009 or something. And then early 2010, I sang at a benefit concert for the Haiti earthquake relief in January 2010. And in the house band there was Mark Indictor on fiddle, and he and I were there early. And I wanted to do an old Appalachian ballad by Gene Ritchie, Brightest and Best, for this performance. And I asked Mark if he could just do a simple drone, which means just one long held note, He was so great at that and so easy to work with and so nice. I asked him if he'd want to come and talk to us about being part of the band. And I knew that, you know, it really depended on whether or not he could collaborate with Rob and Steve, because we'd formed this kind of, you know, bond and this kind of group, small group, around creating new sounds with new songs. So we all sat, the four of us sat down together, and Mark was so facile and so talented and so excited by the new work that or the new songs, that it all just fell so into place, and his contribution has been stunning for all of us, because he's really raised the bar for our you know, our sense of doing well and creating, and he's a wonderful performer and just a joy to know and to travel with. So we just really hit the jackpot with Mark, and that's was the last of the incoming, you know, in 2010, 6 years ago now.
Wow. So you guys have been working together for a while then.
Yes, I know. We actually created the band in 2003, and our last edition was in 2010. Yeah. So it's been a good long career, and we have several albums, even a live album from the Freight and Salvage at Berkeley, under our belt. And so we feel pretty accomplished right now.
Yeah, you guys are accomplished. You shouldn't feel that way. You are accomplished. So there's a lot of folk music that comes out of Southern California these days. What do you think it is about Southern California that attracts people to that genre?
I think probably storytelling, and I think that there's a strong feeling or desire to be a singer-songwriter here, because there are opportunities to perform, and there also might be possibilities to license songs for film and television. So there's lots of opportunities to create music and to be heard. But as far as folk, I think that most folk and acoustic roots music in California resides in Northern California regions. And we've had to, not had to, but we've wanted to tour in Northern California because of the wide variety of venues that are open to that music. We pretty much exhausted the ones here, and we play, you know, frequently, but I think that probably folk music in Southern California is based on the singer-songwriter group of folks.
Yeah. And you guys are kind of spreading yourselves out. You just recently went out to the Merlefest.
Merlefest is now going to be in its 30th year come next spring of 2017. And it was established as a memorial festival to Doc Watson's son, Merle Watson, who died tragically on his farm when he wasn't even 30 years old. I believe Merle Watson was 28 when he died. And so Doc Watson, I'm sure all of you know who that was. Doc was a pioneer and a giant in acoustic guitar music, and he was absolutely brilliant mountain man from Deep Gap, North Carolina, and came to New York City in the 60s and was swept up in the folk revival. He was a blind man from an early age, but he overcome all those obstacles to be quite the seminal artist. And so when his son passed away, they established this festival in Wilkes County, North Carolina, on the campus of Wilkes Community College. And it's absolutely beautiful. It's in the foothills of the Blue Ridge. Actually, it's not the foothills. It's actually right in the Blue Ridge Mountains of North Carolina. It's absolutely beautiful country. And it's so well done. It's so well organized. And we were so thrilled to be part of it. It's a very eclectic music festival, I was telling you before, Kathy, that there's no genre-specific kind of structure to Merlefest. It's so eclectic. You'll have John Prine, you'll have Old Crow Medicine Show, and you'll have Gillian Welch and David Rawlings. You'll have Sam Bush. So you have giants of all genres of acoustic music, which is really reflective of what Doc Watson did in his career. He was so eclectic, played blues, played bluegrass, played folk music. Whatever he did was just a wonderful artistic expression of great skill and great heart. So, and that's really what we felt there. It's just really a stellar, I mean, Steve, my husband called it the Telluride of the South, because there's so many giant artists there that come and perform, and you're just completely blown away by the talent level. Even the artists that are not well known, you know, so many brilliant artists have been discovered that are on the stages of Merlefest, and so we were thrilled to be there.
Is that your first time there?
Yes. Yes, and never had attended, you know, because I've been living out of the Mid-South for a long time.
So what other festivals have you guys played? You mentioned Telluride. Have you done that one too?
No, we haven't been to Telluride, but we played a lot of local festivals here in Southern California. And, you know, we were at Topanga Banjo and Fiddle Contest a lot. And we were going again to the good old-fashioned Bluegrass Festival in San Jose, near San Jose, this August. And we had done a lot of solstice festivals and smaller festivals in this area.
I had the pleasure of hearing you guys at Far West Conference this past year. Are you going to be going back to Far West in Seattle this time?
I think we probably might have to skip it this year. I think that basically it's because of the fact that I think there's some rules involved about showcasing from year to year. And I'm also busy kind of reforming our band and rehearsing a trio formation of our full quintet. So I think that my energies are going to be going towards that. We're going to be doing some touring here and in the UK with a really interesting duo group called The Good Intentions. It's a very well-known Americana husband and wife duo. And we realized recently when we were together in a song circle that our music was very complementary. So we're getting prepared a tour to the UK in the fall of 2017. And we're going to be doing some shows with them here in December of this year. I'm going to be also putting together a little bit of a duo, trio tour in the spring of 2017 just for my husband and myself to do house concerts through Northern California and one up into Oregon. So we're kind of looking at other things that we're planning, but I know we'll return to Far West at some point. It's an organization that's real close to my heart.
Yeah, it's a great time. KC Cafe Radio was there last year, and we're going to be going back again, so we're looking forward to doing that. You mentioned your trio. Tell everyone the name of the trio and who is in that trio.
Well, it's going to be called the Susie Glaze High Lonesome Trio, and basically I'm calling it that so that everyone who's known our work in the past will be able to recognize us and know what we're bringing to the table. The trio will consist of myself and Steve Rankin on mandolin, bouzouki, and guitar, and Mark and Dichter on fiddle. When we've played in this configuration before and found that it was more mobile, but also it was also quite full as far as reflecting our sound, and that we are able, because of all the instruments we play, to create a really varied and interesting program with the three of us. As I've said before, Mark and Dichter is so facile and so able to play any genre and make any song sound full. And with Steve and I think that it will be an interesting trio, an interesting sound, an interesting version of what we do as a full quintet. Again, we're planning some touring in the spring of 17, and then in the fall of 17, we'll go over to the UK and do some stuff with the Good Intentions. So it's exciting, fertile time, you know, kind of a regrouping, I think, literally and figuratively.
Are most of the songs going to be songs you do with the High Lonesome Band, or is it going to be some new material?
I think it'll be both, Kathy. It'll be, because our body of work with High Lonesome Band is now quite full. I mean, we've done 5 studio albums and 1 live album, and we have a gigantic song roster. But then also, I think there are a few more that Steve and I have had on the back burner that we've always wanted to do. And, you know, things by standard songs like old country songs, old ballads, but also contemporary pieces like one by Linda Thompson and Lyle Lovett songs, you know, things that we are drawn to that we think we can reinterpret. You know, we've already done that once with a Steve Earle song that Steve does that I still believe, you know, all respect to Steve Earle, but I think that my Steve Rankin does a wonderful job on Me and the Eagle, which is a wonderful song by Steve Earle, and it's quite beautiful. So if we feel that we can give something to a song that we've loved for a long time, we're going to be developing it for duo trio.
That's great, and I look forward to hearing it. Are you going to be recording as the trio as well?
You know, we have to be doing that. You're absolutely right. I think that first off, we need to work on a video project for the three of us so we can get some YouTube video up. There's quite a bit of YouTube video of live performance of the full quintet. And so I believe that we need some trio and quartet. I know that our bassist, Fred Sanders, will be joining us on selected shows, especially if they're local. So we're going to be working on that first. And then I think that we'll be able to get some recording going, you know, at least an EP. So we'll have something to give people at shows.
That would be great. Yeah. And make sure you send us a copy too. So.
Sure will.
So it sounds like the trio itself might be targeting Europe a little bit on your tour. Is there a reason why you think you want to target Europe first?
No, it's basically that the songs that we do are grounded in British history, in either England, Ireland, and Scotland. You might know that I do a lot of Jean Ritchie songs. I cover a lot of her material, whether it's her original songs or her collected traditional ballads. And that balladry was steeped and rooted in the British Isles. So bringing all that music back to them is just such a natural, obvious fit that I think that the audience would be very enthusiastic and welcoming. And I feel like it would be kind of like a bit of a mission to bring it to them, you know? Like, this is how it's come down through the ages, you know? This song, like, for instance, the Barbara Allen, you know, or any of the Dens of Yarrow, you know, Brightest and Best, all those songs come from the British Isles. So bringing it back to them in our way would be a real thrill artistically.
Have you been there before? Have you done Europe before, or is this your first time?
Not playing. We've toured on personal tours, on personal trips, but haven't performed there yet and want to. So we're excited to be collaborating with the Good Intentions. And they play a lot over here, too. So we felt that a tour featuring two duos performing from the British Isles and United States with our music's kind of blending genre, place, geography, and time would be a really interesting show. So we're going to be doing some dates in Southern California, Northern California, and then the ones over there in England just to start out. And we're going to be calling it the Country Across the Pond or something like that.
That sounds great. You need to come out to the Midwest at some point too. So I wanted to talk a little bit about White Swan and then the difference you think between White Swan and your newest album, Not That Kind of Girl. Well, how do you hear a difference between the two CDs?
Well, I think one is a technical difference. We used a different studio for Not That Kind of Girl. We found that it created a different sonic quality. We've had several close colleagues here who know us well comment on this and point it out to me. And so I know that there is a heard difference, an audible difference, if you will, between the two albums. Of course, we had Herb Peterson as producer for this new one, and he did guide and help a lot on selections of songs, on arrangements, and he found our engineer as well as one player for us, an accordion player on Dens of Yarrow, Skip Edwards. So I think probably that the new album artistically is a little less romantic. I think it's a little more diverse. I think it's an interesting work. I think it's a natural evolution of our band. I think it shows a great deal of artistic creativity as far as original writing goes. We put in covers of songs from David Olney and from Heartland by Denise Hagen, an Irish writer. We did a cut of Prisoner in Disguise, which was a tribute to Linda Ronstadt. We were able to make a music video out of that. That's on our YouTube channel, Prisoner in Disguise music video. It's pretty interesting. And of course, we did cover Ernest Troost again on The Last to Leave. I think the album is so interesting that it opens with something that I'd like to call in theater they have what's called an overture. You know, in lots of theatrical productions, you'll hear overtures, which are beginnings, an introduction to the work. And the first song, Independence, is an instrumental. And it really was written to be the beginning of something, the beginning of a new work. And it places first in the album. And it's really like an overture. And it's quite wonderful.
I agree. Sonically, it sounds better. And also, I like the diversity on this album a lot. So with the last album, White Swan, you kind of coined the phrase new grass music. Would you say this one is still in that new grass vein?
No, I don't think it is. I think that we actually dropped the word new grass from our description. This is a folk album. This is an Americana folk album. And it depends on what you use to describe Americana. I think that a lot of Americana right now is being described as with lots of electric sounds, drums, and basically acoustic slash electric bands. So that it's like a rock band with acoustic instruments. But I think of Americana as a mixed bag of sounds that were rooted in all the elements that made up America. It's a melting pot of Celtic, it's Delta blues, it's Texas swing, it's Irish jigs, it's balladry, you know, murder balladry or just tragic balladry. It's torch songs, it's sweet melodies about romance. And it's also kind of rock and roll songs talking about independence, like Never Give Up. So, I mean, it begins with independence. It ends with Never Give Up. And so, you know, there's a message here. But I just think this album reflects Americana, but it's got so many other elements in it that you could call folk. I don't think there's any bluegrass in here. I mean, except with one exception, which is the song called The Mountain. And The Mountain is not necessarily a bluegrass song, but I think the bluegrass folks would enjoy it. But it really does reflect more of a new Gene Ritchie song, a song about mountaintop removal and the tragedy of that. Another original song from Rob Carlson. It's really more mountainy and more Appalachian mountainy than I would say grassy. But, you know, that's just really in the ear of the beholder. We did have a banjo on it. Herb Peterson lent his wonderful banjo to this song. And I think it's probably my favorite cut on this whole album is The Mountain. And I'm always really proud to play it. When we play shows these days, I'll often do The Mountain right up next to Gene Ritchie's song, Black Waters, because they're about the same thing. They're about mountaintop removal and the tragedy, the lost lives and the lost livelihoods. It's a treat to be able to share it, even though it's about something that's tragic and can make you quite angry. It makes me angry.
It's actually one of my favorite songs on the album as well. I wanted to talk about Herb Peterson here for a second. How did you get him to produce this album?
Well, we were at a Far West convention, actually, when he and Chris Hillman were being honored as Best in the West. And I went up to talk to them about Linda Ronstadt, about how they were in her book, Simple Dreams, that I was reading, and congratulate them. In our conversation, I said, Linda has been diagnosed with Parkinson's disease, and she can no longer sing, and it's such a tragedy. And they agreed. And I said, it makes me want to do one of her songs, just as a tribute. And Herb said, which one do you want to do? And I said, oh, how about Prisoner in Disguise? And he said, well, I'll play on it. And Chris said he would play on it. So we found ourselves in the studio making Prisoner in Disguise with them. We got their permission to film them while we were making the recording of the song, just for posterity. And we so enjoyed working with Herb on that song that I took canvas of the rest of the guys in the band and asked them, should we ask Herb to produce? And they said, yes, we really enjoy working with him. So I did. He agreed. And that's how it ended up. He was our producer for the whole album.
That's awesome. Prisoner in Disguise is probably one of my favorite Linda Ronstadt albums. That one and Heart Like a Wheel, I think, are my two favorites.
I agree.
You picked a good one there. You just mentioned Chris Hillman. What did he play on the album?
He's a mandolinist these days. He played mandolin on Prisoner in Disguise, and he did a wonderful job. I think you might enjoy watching the music video because you can see Herb and Chris there laying down their tracks. It's really, really cool. We were so thrilled to be able to get them on there and make the film, too.
Yeah, it's a wonderful video. I watched it. It's on YouTube. You can go to your website and link to it, and then it's also on YouTube as well. Earlier, I think you mentioned Joe Craven. He played on That Kind of Girl as well. You've also worked with him live as well, right?
Yes, I've played several shows with Joe as our guest. When we're in the same place at the same time, I always ask him to sit in, and he sits in with our band frequently. And so when we had this song, Never Give Up, which is quite percussive, we mused how wonderful it would be to have Joe around to play his drums. He's a brilliant musician, and he played percussion on Never Give Up, and he employs all the wonderful sounds, or some of the wonderful sounds only he can do, and made that really pop. He's on Never Give Up and is so much fun. We're going to be doing some shows with him this fall when he and his new trio, the Sumtimers, come to Southern California. And I'm excited about that, sitting in with them and doing some old American standards and whatever else comes up. So my trio and his trio will be doing some shows that he's referring to as the six-pack.
Very good.
Six-pack evening.
That's great. Another song I wanted to ask you about was This Old House. Tell me about that song.
Well, that's an original song from Rob Carlson, and he sings that on this album. This is kind of a Randy Newman-esque type bittersweet love song about growing up in a town with someone you loved as a child. They moved on and the town changed so much. You know how towns will change when new buildings go up and other ones are torn down, and that was someone's garden and now it's a mini mall and things like that. So it's like, this is where we grew up and this is where I fell in love with you and you found someone to marry and I hope you're happy, and I could never get married because I couldn't find anybody. And you know, it's just a sad, sweet song about growing up and going on without the love that you knew as a child.
Yeah, I think the reason I'm attracted to that song so much is because it reminds me of my hometown. You know, I think anybody who grew up in a small town or something and they've moved away from it and they come back and they see how it changed, I think that song really speaks to them. You never have a problem giving up the microphone to other people to sing lead on the occasional song on with a High Lonesome Band. How do you guys make that decision? Who gets to sing what parts?
Well, it's when an individual, say, for instance, Steve, my husband, will bring to the group a song that he's been attracted to for a long time and say, I want to work this one up because it speaks to me. I want to say these words to the world. Recently, I know Oprah Winfrey was quoted as saying about maybe making a Broadway debut for herself. She has to think about what words she wants to say. She wants the world to hear these words from her. And that's the message from your heart and soul to the rest of the world that you want to say. And in this case, with, say, Millionaire, David Olney's wonderful song, it's a real angry, bitter tale about avarice, about greed and money making and how it corrupts the individual and the soul. And it's a very powerful message. It always is in any age, but especially now. And Steve really tears it up. He's got a great voice. It just was a very viable and powerful song. In the case of Rob with This Old House, he actually was urging someone else to sing that song. And he had been performing it, and we all realized how lovely it was for him to do. And none of us could replicate that, no matter what kind of voice we had. But because he lived it, it was him. And he sounds so dear and sweet on it that it had to be right. So I think that's the song tells you a lot about what it needs in the way of music, who sings it, how you arrange it, when in the show it should be performed, to what audience it needs to be heard. It has requirements that speak to you if you just listen and you know how it should go. And also, I mean, you know, just practically, I like to have a break, and I think that the audience likes to have a break from the same voice all the time. You know, it's like mix everything up. Mix it up in lots of ways with genre, subject matter, tempo, keys, who's singing the lead, who's telling the story right now. Susie, sit down for a while and rest, and let's hear from Rob, or let's hear from Fred, or hear from Steve. And even Mark will sing an occasional song, and he sounds wonderful too. He just didn't make it on this album as a lead singer, but I think that we are a true ensemble, even though my name is in the front. I do sing the lion's share of the songs, but it's good to have someone step out and show what they can do, but also that they get to share something. They're not just sidemen.
Yeah, I think it speaks to how dedicated you are to the music. You're willing to step aside and allow someone else to have the lead for the good of the song, not for your own ego or for the ego of the band or whatever. It shows that you guys work well as a group. You're more about making the song the star than you are about making yourselves the star. So I think that's a wonderful thing that you guys do.
Thank you. Thanks a lot. I appreciate that.
Speaking of making music speak to people, you're working on the new Gene Ritchie tribute album. Tell me about that, and what song are you going to be singing?
Well, actually, that's just done.
Okay, great.
I think it was released in 2014.
Mm-hmm.
And it's on Compass Records. It's called Dear Gene, Artists Celebrate Gene Ritchie. Luckily, the producers got it finished for Compass and placed it in the hands of Gene herself 1 year before she passed away. And that was a real milestone in many respects. It was a milestone for Gene, for all of us who've loved her, for all the artists who are on it, and for the producers and for Gene herself, because they promised her that they would do it and leave it for her as a legacy so she could see it and appreciate it and understand just a little bit of what she's left behind, which is totally vast. I mean, this is a double disc CD compilation, and this is only scratching the surface, Kathy, of what she's left. I mean, when we looked at the body of work that we were to choose from to lend a track, it went on and on and on and on. And this is the best that could possibly have been produced. I mean, there are artists on here like John McCutcheon, Tim O'Brien, Susie Boggess, Judy Collins, Sally Rogers, and Howie Burson. There's Dalian Bradley, Allison Brown, Kathy Mattea, Peggy Seeger, Oscar Brand, Debbie Cowan and John Roberts, Molly Andrews, Robin and Linda Williams, and Pete Seeger himself contributing a track. I tell people this is a collector's item, and that if you like any of this music, you owe it to yourself to purchase a copy. It is called Dear Gene, Artists Celebrate Gene Ritchie. And my track on here was Gene's original song, West Virginia Mine Disaster. It was her song that I do pretty much every show about the tragedy of mine disaster, the loss from a woman's point of view in losing her husband to a mine accident. It's quite profound. I always hear Jean in my ear when I sing it. She left a gift to the world in that song among hundreds of others. I'm so honored to be on it, so honored to be included.
That's wonderful. Do you know where people can purchase this album or they can find it at?
Yeah, it's at compassrecords.com. It's C-O-M-P-A-S-S. If you just Google Compass Records, they're out of Nashville. You might be able to find it on Amazon, but I know that you can purchase a copy through Compass.
I just wanted to mention to everyone that they can find your music at CD Baby and iTunes and Amazon. And then they can also go to YouTube and see your wonderful videos, and especially check out the video for Prisoner in Disguise. It's really great. And then your website is susieglaze.com, and I'm going to spell Susie for everybody so they know how this is done. It's SusieGlaze.com, susieglaze.com. So you can go to Susie Glaze website. She's got a great website there, and really a lot of great information and some really nice reviews written about Susie and the High Lonesome Band. And then you're also on Facebook, correct?
Yes, that's right, Facebook. And the links to all of our social media, YouTube, purchasing and sampling music is all on susieglaze.com.
Wonderful. Is there any other things you needed to mention before we hang up here?
I don't know. I think that I feel like I've covered everything. I was looking at my notes. I think that that's really all I can say, other than I just appreciate all the work you're doing, Kathy, and for including me. And you might see us up in Washington after all. It's yet to be determined. I might just drag Steve up there and do some duo work with him just for fun, because I would love to see everybody.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you and your husband should just come up and do some things yourself. I think that'd be great.
Yeah, hallway jams are where I discover so many people.
Yeah.
I'm in Memphis at Folk Alliance International. The Carolina Chocolate Drops and the Queeby Sisters were all playing in the hallway. And so, you know, I mean, that kind of serendipity does still exist.
Yeah, especially at those conferences. It's just amazing. Music is just everywhere, and it's not just music, it's great music and amazing players and people who truly appreciate the song and making music. That's what I love about those conferences. Well, Susie, thank you so much again for sitting and chatting with me for a little bit today. And we'll hear more of Not That Kind of Girl on KC Cafe Radio. And people can also request songs from White Swan as well. And hopefully we'll be getting some new music from you in the not too distant future, I guess.
Absolutely. We'll be getting on that, Kathy. And I so appreciate all your time and listening to all my long stories. And I'll keep you guys abreast of what's happening with us.
That's great. Thank you so much. And once again, I just want to mention real quick, it's SusieGlaze.com. And her music can be found on iTunes, CD Baby, Amazon, and make sure you go to YouTube as well for her videos. Thank you, Susie.
Thanks, Kathy.